Welcome once again, everyone, to the Baseball America podcast, along with Will Lingo. I'm John Manuel. Thanks for the download. Spring training is upon us, Will. The college baseball season is starting. Very exciting time of year. Pitchers and catchers have reported. They're actually, we'll actually have games to talk about soon.
Most of our books have gone to press.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful time of the year.
I wasn't even talking about that, but I'm excited about that as well. So we'll take your questions, as usual, at podcast@baseballamerica.com. We're keeping up our New Year's resolution to take more and read more email here on the Baseball America podcast. So send them in, Jerome, to podcast@baseballamerica.com. But first and foremost, Will, next week to be unveiled at baseballamerica.com, we got, I think, really what most of our readers have been waiting for all year. That's Baseball America's Top 100.
Often imitated, but never duplicated.
Yeah, the great thing is that it's more often imitated these days, because I think everyone realize this is a good thing to do. It's a fun thing to do. Always love to see the other ones, and always love to go through the process ourselves. It's very difficult to go through it, and I think the thing I like best about our top 100 is actually the process, because you have to take your time and really realize, do I really think that this guy is really more valuable in a major league context or a major league club than this other guy will be? And you're balancing ceiling and the great likelihood of reaching that ceiling and all those things together.
And the great thing about doing it with not just yourself is that when somebody challenges your ranking, not from a bad perspective,
right,
but when somebody just says, why did you rank this guy ahead of that guy, you actually have to think about, well, you know, maybe I don't like that guy as much as I thought.
Or maybe I like
him. You sort of develop, like, in your head a little thumbnail sketch of what you think the guy's going to be, but
right,
then when you're forced to examine it a little bit more deeply, you think, well, I think I'm a little bit wrong on that. So,
and everybody, and you know, our process, to explain a little bit, is essentially you, me, Chris Klein, and Jim Callis this year put together our own personal top 150s, and then we put them into spreadsheet form and merged them all together and had a consensus 150, and then kind of went down how it turned out on the votes and kind of debated guys back and forth. And we've done that for 4 or 5 years now.
Oh, we've done it longer than that. But, yeah, it's a great way to do it because, first of all,
Is that always the method? Has that been the methodology? I thought that it was only...
It's been that way for a while.
I thought it was only recently in the last 5 years or 6 years that we did it that way, and before that was more like, okay, who's number one?
For the very first one, before either of us were here, it was the entire staff gathered around the table and went down the list one by one, and the meeting took 5 hours, and I'm sure nobody was happy when it was over.
See, if we had more time, I would love to do that, but we just don't have that kind of time.
I just don't think that's productive.
I mean,
maybe for the top 10 you could do that.
That's
and
what I'm
really
saying.
Get into the nitty-gritty, but, I mean, for 30 to 70, you know, there's not a whole lot of separation between those guys.
That's why I don't think it would take 5 hours anymore. I think that we all realize that there's not a huge, like, you know, in some organizations, there's a chasm between number 5 and 6,
mm-hmm,
or number 13 and number 14. But in a lot, they're not. But in the top 100, players at number 90, the 100 range, those guys could be pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
And Drew Stubbs is number 100. I'll give away Drew Stubbs. I'm pretty sure Jim Callis has in a chat. So Drew Stubbs is number 100. You know, Drew Stubbs is an all-star profile.
Mm-hmm.
He's a 80 runner, maybe a 70 runner, but he's 6'3", 60 at his best. He's a premium defender with a good arm, and he's got big-time power.
I know that's why Jim has always liked him, because even if he doesn't become even an average hitter, he's still going to be a good big leaguer if he does everything else he's supposed to do.
Right. He should be, at the very least, a fourth outfielder because of his defense and running ability. And that's, but his upside is pretty high, and that's at number 100. But we're not going to give away our top 100 today.
When you go through the list one by
one, give you one,
it's almost like, if somebody in authority brings up, all right, I had so-and-so at number 10, even if you had him at number 50, you're, I don't know, I think that affects how you are going to throw somebody out for discussion.
Right.
When you have to rank guys 1 through 150, when you have to slot 150 players, it really makes you think about that. And then the spreadsheet is unforgiving. You just throw it all into the spreadsheet and let the numbers come out however they come out. And then, obviously, we mess with it once we get the raw numbers. But it also gives you a chance to see, like, whoa, I was way off on this guy for
right,
some reason. Or, you know, maybe I don't even remember the player. It was one of the new Japanese pitchers where I just slotted him into my spreadsheet to make sure I thought about him, but then never moved him. So I had him ranked at like 40 or 50, and he didn't even belong in the top 100. So mistakes like that get weeded out through the process.
Yeah. I was confronted in the group spreadsheet at the end with like, would rank here, John's mistake. Would rank here, John's mistake, because I left out a couple
of
players.
That was a self-admitted mistake. We would never expose someone in that way in the meeting.
Well, one of the great things that we're doing differently is that we're doing two different things with this year's Top 100. We'll have a prospect depth chart, which is cool. I'm not sure how different that necessarily is, but I like the prospect depth chart.
One different thing about it is that we're listing guys in the depth chart where we think they're going to end up, not where they're playing now. So,
which is the way we do it in the handbook.
Right, so it gives you a little bit different perspective on some guys. It doesn't result in a whole lot of movement, but it does give you, I think, a little bit better picture of a player's true value.
But we're also doing others receiving votes, which we don't even do in our college top 25 rankings because there are no votes. They're just rankings.
That is a hammer it out 1 to 25.
And that is from Chimpan Kevin Ahrens to Chimpan Z Jordan Zimmerman. So players from A to Z who also got votes in the top 150 from the high of someone like Brad Lincoln, who was on one person's top 100 and not on anyone else's top 150, to guys like Michael Burgess or Madison Bumgarner, who all four of us voted for on our 150s but just didn't get enough votes to get in the top 100. And then when we really set him on it, none of us really thought, you know, I'm going to really go out on a limb and fight for this guy to get in the top 100. Yeah, so it is a collective.
It'll be interesting for people to look at that and see, like, wow, this guy got four votes. He was just on the cusp.
Right. I think if there's strengths and weaknesses to it being the collective, but I think I'd much rather have it. I love our process because I think all of us are bringing information from different organizations, from different minor leagues where we know those players better than others and we can advocate for that kind of stuff and try to convince the rest of us. And I like our process.
And it shows you how many different players are considered for the list. I mean, there's 92 guys who didn't make the list who got votes in the top 150.
So 192 names that were considered, basically, which I think is pretty interesting. It's the Baseball America podcast. He's Will. I'm John. The other big feature that we did with our top 100 last year, we did risk factors, which I think we really liked risk factors, bringing up here best case and worst case scenarios for these players. And you know, James Loney was a great example of a risk factor player who we all liked him, and he was in like number 42. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, I think we were all – I think a lot of scouts are the same way. A little tentative maybe on James Loney in case he becomes the next Sean Burroughs. And in 2007, he started to look like he's not going to become the next Sean Burroughs.
Right.
The power started to show up.
And our best-case scenario for him was John Olerud.
Right.
Now he looks like he's going to be better –
maybe better.
Better than his best-case scenario.
If he ever hits 360, that'll be something. We'll see.
Well, that's true. And his worst case was Travis Lee. I think he's already avoided his worst case.
As long as he plays hard, he'll avoid that one. And then we've got and Will Inman was a fascinating one when we did risk factors. We were kind of like, you know, we've never ranked a player like Will Inman in the top 100.
I had a feeling when we were doing that one, looking for the guys. Because the worst case and best case guys we compared with were guys that had been in the top 100 in the past. And when we looked back at past top 100s to try to find guys like Will Inman, it's like, ooh, we've never ranked anybody this, really.
Never ranked the short right-hander with average stuff and plus command. We've just never done that. And I mean average stuff. There's not even like a plus changeup, that kind of thing. So it'll be interesting to see how Will Inman shows up. Will Inman got the double A by the end of last year and got traded and fell off the top 100, and in fact, I don't think he got any votes for the 150.
No, I think I voted for him. I was just checking the... actually, I didn't, because he's not on the others receiving votes.
Doesn't mean that we don't like Will Inman.
I think I considered him and ended up not putting him in the top 150.
I think that now we're a little bit more convinced. He's got work to do to convince us that he's not just the guy who throws strikes and has a good breaking ball who dominates a ball. That's kind of the impression I think we have of Will Inman. And those guys are fairly prevalent. Sean Gallagher is a guy who's busted out of that, who improved his velocity as he's been in the minor leagues and has continued to have success at upper levels because his fastball is not fringy. So
he still gets underrated.
And I think he is still underrated, but I think that's actually the Will Inman comp. Is he going to turn into Sean Gallagher, or is he going to turn into, oh, I don't know, John Connolly, who was left-handed, but...
And this year, the split decisions does kind of take you inside the process a little bit because it's... that's what we talk about after we go through the consensus list. After we, you know, compile the consensus list, we look at guys. Jim is especially good at sort of highlighting those cases where, you know, you have this outfielder at 50 and this outfielder at 60. Why is this guy 10 spots better than that guy? Or why is this guy who was drafted fifth ahead of this guy who was drafted first?
Right, so no risk factor this year. This year was split decision. And, you know, I think really the one of the ones that kicked it off was a winter of arguing between me and Jim Callis of who's better, Jabba Chamberlain or Clay Buchholz. And those guys are both in the top 10 and rank among the top pitching prospects in the game, no doubt. And we really are kind of split as a staff of who's better. I'm not going to tell you who ended up being ahead of it, but obviously Jerry Krasnick talked about it on ESPN.com and quoted me and Jim about it. And it was pretty funny. He talked to both of us when he got that assignment, and we predicted exactly what the other would say about Jabba Chamberlain versus Clay Buchholz. I'm on the Jabba Chamberlain side. And Jim is on the Clay Buchholz side. I think you're on the Clay Buchholz side, aren't you?
I'm slightly on the Clay Buchholz side, but I'm not nearly as like Jim. Definitely, I mean, and it stands to reason. Jim did the Red Sox list. You did the Yankees list.
Right.
You always like the guys you have ranked. You tend to like the guys you rank more than other guys. So I think I would give Buchholz the slight nod, but I mean,
I think
both of those
guys
are studs.
I think it was 3-1 Buchholz until I convinced. Chris Klein to come over to the dark side with me.
He was not convicted,
and I was his Sith Lord. And I won him over to the Yankees side of it with Jabba Chamberlain, because I think he was number 8 on Chris's initial personal top 50, and then by the time I got done with him, he was number 4. So,
those two guys are going to be on the cover if you're looking for the issue when it arrives in your mailbox or newsstand, so... That's obviously sort of the highlight battle, but then there are other little battles like that throughout the list.
And what you'll get 5 in the magazine and 10 online. I also like that. You're going to get bonus split decisions online.
Right, because we have, like I said, we have these types of arguments throughout the list. And another interesting way to split it, we didn't do this, but the place where we monkey with the list the most is really from 90 to 110. You know, if you get on the top 100 from 90 to 100, you're definitely vulnerable, because
Correct.
When you look at the guys, the next 10 to 15 guys who didn't make the list, to see, you know, why they didn't make the list and how they stack up against guys that did. So that's always an interesting place to look for guys, too.
And that's when, you know, one of our split decisions involved a guy toward the back of the list.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, we don't have a whole lot of relief pitchers ranked, and that stands to reason. It's hard to figure out who the closer is going to be. The big-time major league closers are, and most of the time, they're starters in the minor leagues.
Right, there are very few guys who are groomed as closers as they come up through the minor leagues.
And organizations are hoping that these guys will still start. A guy like maybe a Max Scherzer, I think the Diamondbacks might still give him one more shot to start, but more likely he's going to go to the bullpen where he was outstanding in the Arizona Fall League.
Right.
And then you're contrasting him with a guy like Chris Perez, who was a college closer at Miami and as a minor league closer, and probably will start out as a major league setup man. And you know, both those guys made the top 100, but I think we all kind of ended up agreeing that Chris Perez ended up lower than maybe he kind of should. But I think the fact that he is...
I'm not sure he would have even made the list if I hadn't ranked him as high as I did. But, I mean, to me it was the split decision between Scherzer and Perez. If you think Scherzer is going to be a closer, I think his stuff is better than Perez's, but it's not a whole lot better.
Right.
They're both going to be closers, and Perez has proven, I mean, he's closed, like you say, forever. And has proven himself. I don't see a huge difference between those guys.
And I guess that is really the question. I think that's the reason I rank Chris Perez lower in my head, is that's just a rare guy who closed in college,
mm-hmm.
then closed in the minors, and then closed in the major leagues. Usually, the guys who do that get to the big leagues a little quicker. And so, is he going to be David Ardsma, a journeyman guy, or is he going to be Chad Cordero or Houston Street? Is he going to be Matt Anderson, or is he going to be Greg Olson? I mean, that's really the college closer profile. That's just a lot of, it's 50-50. Those guys end up being really good immediately, or they usually end up being journeyman guys. And that's why I'm just, to me, Chris Perez, this will probably be his last year in the top 100 no matter what.
Yeah.
He's either going to be an established big league guy by next year, or he's going to be a guy who I will lose faith in. Because the college closer.
He should definitely spend all season in the big leagues. And obviously, if Isringhausen doesn't get hurt, he's going to set up. But
right.
I think he is their closer in waiting.
One last, split decision that's a fun one to talk about. I got some debate going. Was our first baseman. We have the apples and oranges. We have Kosuke Fukudome,
really
Jason Howard.
One.
I know you like that one. We'll talk about that one instead of the first base. And that is interesting because Jason Hayward and Kosuke Fukudome end up very close to each other in our top 100, as it turns out. And one guy's a 30-year-old, basically big league free agent. The other guy is a raw, just drafted high school outfielder from Atlanta.
Most of the arguments we end up having are about guys with the same profile, and why do you rank one guy ahead of another one?
Like first baseman Lars Anderson, Joey Votto, and Derek Barton, or the closers we just talked about.
Right, and you know it's different degrees of similarity, and then you sort of really get down to the nitty gritty of their profiles and what one has that another doesn't. And I like this one because it is just completely opposite players—a finished product who you're pretty sure what you're going to get, and then a guy who has an unlimited ceiling just about, but you really have no idea how he's going to tap into it yet.
And we ranked them very close to each other. Like I said, I ended up ranking Hayward higher just because I just believe if anyone's going to rank the young high school guy higher, it should be us. I'm just philosophically, I've bought into that. I've had that. Mm-hmm. I drank that Kool-Aid a long time ago. So I have another swig with Jason Hayward and rank him ahead of Kosuke Fukudome.
And I like Fukudome better just because he is a finished product. You know what you're going to get. I think he's going to be sort of a blend of Ichiro and Hideki Matsui. And, you know, it's a sure bet. But I love Jason Hayward, too. So
I'm just struggling to not make an inappropriately un-PC comment. So we'll move on.
Yeah, Jason Stark had a great reference to that. I'm not going to phrase it as artfully as he did, but he did refer to him as like the most carefully pronounced name of spring training or something.
Correct.
Like that.
Correct. That's kind of where I was headed. So we're really looking forward to it. I hope you are too. Going to have a nice, I think it's going to look great online. And I really like how the split decisions turned out for us in our top 100. So that's coming Tuesday at baseballamerica.com.
I think we're also going to have a top 100 prospects related contest for people, so they should
also
visit the site to check that out as well.
You can tell your friends that you won a contest, and it's an easier one to win, I believe, than the Seinfeld contest.
With actual prizes.
Correct, from Majestic, sponsored by Majestic.
And Baseball America.
So we're looking forward to that. Finally, to wrap up this week's podcast, we've gone most of this winter, Will, without talking much about Project Runway, but let's sum up. We're getting ready, we're down to cases at Project Runway up. Personal favorite of Will's and of mine, as far as a reality TV show goes. We're down to the final four, Will. Who's your prediction of who wins between Rami, Chris, March, Jillian, and Fierce Christian?
I'm going to go with Jillian in an upset. I think Christian is the safe bet because he's just been so good all season long. But I think Jillian, with basically unlimited time to put together clothes, she was always the one who struggled with time management and always
Correct.
Had to slap everything together at the last minute and still performed well. I think with unlimited time, she's gonna shine.
I agree with you, actually. I'm on the Jillian bandwagon, mostly because I really just don't like Christian. He's a little too fierce for my taste.
I think he is definitely
one of the most arrogant,
most hated person on this season's
edition. But see,
edition.
You're wrong, because now I'm going to spoil a little spoiler for you. If you haven't watched the reunion show, he won the fan favorite.
Really?
He won the 10 grr check for fan favorite, which I was stunned that he won the $10,000.
Just love to hear him say fierce every week.
I guess so,
but I also think Chris is, I hope he goes to the final show, because I just think his runway show would be very interesting.
He'd say dark horse, would be more like dark buffalo or dark ox when you're talking about Chris March.
Yeah,
you gotta love it when the fat guy makes fat jokes. That's pitiful of me, really. But
I think he could do an over the top show, and I think Rami has proven that he is a one note guy, and he was a very talented one note guy, and that's what has gotten him through the season. But it seemed like the judges soured on him as the season went along, and very grudgingly didn't boot him off the last show.
I think Rami could win European or Middle Eastern Project Runway, but I don't think he's got American enough taste to win Project Runway when we're talking about American designer. American designer, Michael Kors, and Nina Garcia. So it's a fun show. Which was your favorite challenge of the year?
Ooh, I thought this was a really good season for challenges. I really liked the one where they designed the prom dress for the high school.
That was
girls.
Interesting.
The wrestling one was good. Wow.
I like the transformed women.
That was
the fat women who lost like large amounts of weight, and they had to redesign their clothes. Plus, it got rid of my least favorite person on the show, the guy who was bald who always talked like this, like didn't stand in.
Yeah, that was a disastrous performance in that show.
He was disastrous, and I was very happy to have him off the show.
And my least favorite easily was the Tiki Barber episode.
Yes, Tiki Barber, hella lame. That was, to sum up very quickly. So it's a fun show. We're on the final four. The last two, I guess they have two more shows to go. You have the elimination of Rami versus Chris, and then I think you can have the next show after that, which is the final Bryant Park Runway show. So if you're going to watch one, if you're going to break your Lenten fast of no live TV, as Will Lingo is trying to do, no TV other than
live
sports,
sporting events.
Basically, live ACC basketball at this point in time. That's one to break it for. So, again, send those questions to us for next week. We actually did not get any new podcast questions other than Steve from Sturbridge, who I actually emailed back. He was asking about J. Brent Cox, the former University of Texas pitcher in the Yankee system. But Steve was asking about J. Brent Cox. And J. Brent Cox was not expected to be ready for opening day. Last I talked to the junkies about him was back in early December, and J. Brent Cox was expected to be throwing off flat ground and transitioning to throwing to a mound by spring training. If there were no setbacks, he would come back by midseason. But, they're going to be very cautious. The Yankees have plenty of Tommy John pitchers who are coming back, and J. Brent Cox is one. And the Yankees like to go more on the 18-month comeback rather than the 12- or 11-month comeback. That some of these Tommy John alumni are going through, but
There's really no reason to rush that anyway. It's gonna take 2 years to return to form anyway.
So. Right. I don't think you're gonna know what you have in J. Brent Cox until 2009. Just like I don't think you're gonna know what you have in Andrew Brackmann until 2009. In which case I find it curious they gave him so much money, but they were buying him out of the NBA too, and they are convicted about Andrew Brackmann. That is for certain. So. We're convicted about the podcast. We appreciate the download, and thank you again. Send those questions into us at podcast@baseballamerica.com. I'll be back on Monday with Aaron Fitt for our first weekly college podcast, and we'll be back Tuesday to talk top 100, I think.
It's really going to be a fun college season, too. I think the compacted college schedule, I think, is a mess in a lot of ways. But I really like the way it organizes the season almost like college football. Like
unintended consequences.
You know the season begins this weekend. It's not sort of dribs and drabs for a month, and then everything's underway.
Oh, there'll be some positives, there's no doubt, and we'll report on them all at baseballamerica.com. For Will, I'm John. We'll talk to you next week. So long, everybody.